Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Hey, and this is Country Joe, Joe Barber. And today our guest is Jim, I guess.
Yes, this is Jim, and he is from Deltona for Chickens.
Right. Yes, that's right. I met Jim the other day at the club picnic. So I guess he wants to tell us all about how he's doing with his fight for getting chickens in Deltona. And that's a good thing because I notice there's a lot of cities across the U.S. that are trying to do the very same thing. So we'll see. How you doing there, Jim?
Well, personally, I'm doing fine, but I wish I could say it's the same for my efforts with the chickens.
Wow, it's not going well.
My last round with the city, I came away a little black and blue, and we're in the process of reorganizing and going in around three.
Yes, I was reading some other cities were doing that, and people were persistent, and it got through. And I had them written down here, and it was amazing. The cities, I mean big cities, that were really out to do this. And I thought, wow, geez. But, I mean, so many cities around Deltona have already done this, right, Jim?
That is correct. We're just located a few miles outside of Orlando, Florida, about a half hour out. In fact, we're about halfway between Daytona Beach and Orlando. And the number of cities that have started to approve the allowing of chickens in as pets in people's backyards have been increasing. Orlando passed it earlier this year. Melbourne, Florida just passed it recently. Jacksonville, Florida allows them. And several other large cities around the area have already realized the benefits of having backyard chickens.
Yes, that's true. And I don't see anything wrong with it myself. And I've been doing a lot of reading about this, and where they have allowed it, they haven't had any problems. And I don't understand what the resistance is. Did they give you any reason why they don't like this?
Well, they always have the same six standard reasons for not allowing chickens or wanting them to come in. But the more we talk with them, the more we get a better idea of what's going on. And the big thing that I walked away with our last meeting with the city was that it seems like whenever we mention backyard chickens, they think we want a chicken farm in our backyards.
Right.
Because we had one commissioner say, oh, I raised 1,000 chickens at one time on my father's farm, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And we're saying, 1,000 chickens in our backyard? Wait a minute. We have a quarter-acre lot.
They'd have to be in bunk beds.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we're saying things like with 1,000 chickens, you know, in your backyard, waste buildup would be so great you wouldn't be able to keep up cleaning up with it. And I said, wait a minute, we're asking for 5.
Yeah. And with no roosters. Yeah, and that's the other thing, you know. If we can get we get no roosters, and then we have no noise, essentially.
Right. Well, the noise seems to be the number one complaint of people who are against chicken. And immediately, like you said, we point out chickens do not make a lot of noise. Roosters do, and that's why we don't want to have a rooster included in our backyard, because we just don't have the space in a city backyard to have a rooster. I mean, sorry, they do crow a little bit in the evening, in the morning, in the afternoon.
And some of them, whenever they feel like it.
Yeah,
you know?
I was just going to say, most of mine like to crow all day, you know. That's why I don't have any.
have a little bit larger place than I have.
Yeah, well, I do. I've got acreage out here. We're way out in the country. And my neighbors have roosters and chickens as well, so they crow to each other all day long. So I guess that's a fun game they play. But anyway, I was just reading the city of Duluth has just gone through all of this, and they've just passed this. And they even have a website up now, DuluthCityChickens.org. And, you know, that might be something you could look at and maybe give you some clues or how they did it, you know. I was just looking at the other cities here. And basically, it's all started out just like how you're doing it, Jim. You know, the fight and getting people to understand that you only want like four or five hens. There's no roosters. There's no noise. There's less, you know, waste than there is with a dog, really. Most of this stuff just goes right into the ground with a few chickens. Yeah. You don't have any problem with that. And that's most of these city people just don't understand that. And I don't know if there's any kind of a guide or a book that you could go through to do that. You know, that's why I was looking at this Duluth, the city of Duluth that just went through that. And they got, you know, a frequently asked questions section on their website. And maybe that would help you if you could look at that, see what they went through. I just happened to be looking at them. There's other cities in there, but I just came across that one.
Now, Jim, if someone was thinking of getting chickens for the first time and they didn't know what department, how do you find out what your city's regulations are regarding chickens?
Well, the more research I did, the more confusing it became. In our city, we have to go to the code enforcement department to find out if we were allowed to have chickens or not. And it is listed in most of the city codes, and most of them are accessible online for your city and to search into it. But we did have one of our neighboring cities, DeBary, Florida, where they did not specify that chickens were banned, and people who did go ahead and get the chickens end up being cited saying that they weren't allowed to have them. So a lot of times it turned out to be according to the interpretation of the governing board or the commissioners at the time. So it became very confusing.
Yeah, each city has a little bit different ordinance. And this all started with that little autistic boy, didn't it? All of this whole deal, how he had his chickens and they were helping him. Actually, the little boy didn't even talk until he got chickens and he started talking. So it was actually like, you know, some sort of medical aid or whatever. That's, I guess, what they were going on. And I guess the city was still against that. Their doctors were fighting for this and the whole deal. So that doesn't look like it's making any headway either, you know, having that. Is that correct?
No. The DeBary's going to be going to another round next month with it. And that family has gone, like you said, because of their autistic son and the chickens being therapeutic for his recovery and improvement, they've hired a lawyer to go on and take on the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, we wish them the best and support them in that because, you know, I'm sorry, if it comes into somebody's health, I'm all in favor of going in favor of helping a child out.
Right. You know, and the other thing, didn't this go national? I thought somebody said this was even on the national news, the autistic boy deal. I didn't see it.
It has gone national on it, and it is continuing, like I said, ongoing. And hopefully it'll be put to a very successful conclusion in the near future.
But I can't help but think if some of the cities right around Orlando are approving it, how your city, how Deltona, can say no if everybody else is saying yes. You know,
and they're probably thinking, well, just because they do it doesn't mean we have to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be that deal. But, I mean, I think the problem is they totally don't understand that. Hens don't make any noise. There's no mess. There's no, you know, it's just not a problem. You know, like I say, I know a lot of people that have chickens in the cities, and their neighbors don't even know it.
Well, we're running out of time for this segment, gentlemen.
Okay. Boy, that went quick.
Jim, it always does when we get into it. Jim, will you stick with us? We'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo, to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo, healthy.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We're here with Chicken Joe, Joe Barber, and we've got Jim Pesha with Chickens for Deltona.
Uh-huh, and we're talking about getting chickens legalized in that city, which they have in a lot of the other cities around there. And Jim's having a struggle here, and I guess we're trying to help him solve some of his problems if we can. And Renee, do you have any ideas? Well, you don't know what you weren't in on the first segment, but Jim's been fighting City Hall, so to speak, I guess, and he's not making too much headway. he left there black and blue.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, like a little bloody lip and a few bumps and bruises here and a black eye, but it wasn't a bad fight.
Wasn't there a time when
everybody
should have chickens?
Huh?
I'm sorry?
I said, wasn't there a time when everybody was supposed to have chickens in their backyard? Two hens for every person would give you enough eggs for everybody to have plenty to eat.
Yes.
Was that an old
that
time
came law? Out of U.S. federal government's recommendations during our
That's
times
right.
of need, such as World War
That's
One,
right.
World War Two, and the Great Depression, that they yep. advocated and encouraged people to have at least two hens for every member of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that long ago that it was standard common practice to have hens in your family backyard.
Yes.
Now, when I grew up, my grandmother lived in downtown Cleveland, and they had very small lots. And she had chickens in her backyard, you know. And they used to keep them in a little box out on the back porch, and she kept her little vegetable garden fertilized with their droppings.
Right. I just can't help but believe all these towns are going to have to allow some sort of chickens into the city, you know, without roosters. There's just so many cities across the U.S. that are doing this now. I just can't see how they can hold out. I really don't.
Nope.
And I, like I say, I don't know what the formula or the magic bullet is here other than getting a hold of other people that were in cities where it did get legalized or allowed and find out what they did, and maybe that's what you could do.
Well, we started out by doing our research on the Internet when we went to approach the city. And the first objection the city gave us was, it would be such a burden on code enforcement to maintain regulations on allowing backyard chickens. And after we pulled our research of 25 major cities that had allowed chickens and have had them for a substantial period of time,
mm-hmm.
and all of them, without exception, came back saying that code enforcement was not an issue.
Well, I always thought code enforcement only went out on a violation or a call. So, I mean, they're not going around, I wouldn't think, to regulate and make sure everybody has just two or four hens in their yard. I would think they would only go to somebody's house if there was a rooster or there was a legitimate complaint, which is their job anyways, not just with chickens, with anything. So I don't see where that's a burden, any more of a burden than what they're doing right now.
Bill, it all depended on how the city codes were written.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a neighboring town just down the road from us called Oviedo. And
right.
They've had chickens in their town for several decades now. And
mm-hmm.
It's a rather well-to-do little community down there. In fact, the Chamber of Commerce rated it as one of the most desirable communities to move to. It's a high-end
wow.
community. They have houses that are in the $200,000 price range. I mean, it's a nice, well-to-do town, and they
mm-hmm.
allow chickens. And their
right.
code consists of two lines. Chickens
mm-hmm.
are allowed, and
yep.
chickens should not become a nuisance. And that's
mm-hmm.
their code. The city of Daytona had a 5-page ordinance on chickens alone. It surpassed
wow.
all the other coding for all the other animals that were allowed in the city. So when you have 5 pages of regulations just to govern 5 animals, I could see where the city could be concerned about enforcement of unnecessary, unrealistic regulations.
Wow. I guess so. But I'm just thinking that these people just don't understand the truth about the whole deal, and they're just considering them like farm animals or like having goats or cows in your yard. I think if they really knew what was going on, like you were saying, you know, they're saying, oh, I remember when we had 1,000 chickens. Well, we're not talking about 1,000. We're talking about 4. I just don't see what the problem is or how you can convince them it's not a problem. Or can't they do a trial thing? Didn't they do that in one of these cities?
Orlando.
Said, well, yeah, it was Orlando. Yeah, they did.
They
said,
have a
we'll
pilot
try
program.
It. Yeah, and it worked out, right, Renee? I believe
yeah.
it did.
As far as I know.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking.
It is still going through the trial period, but with absolutely zero problems to date.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the concerns that Orlando had, you know, they had, none of it ever came through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering from way up here in Boston whether you could, you know, arrange a field trip for them to go to somebody's house in Oviedo because it's a town that has, you know, 2 sentences instead of 5 pages and
mm-hmm.
have visit people's homes that have, you know, with permission, have backyard chickens and say, look, you know, this is a perfectly nice, normal neighborhood, nice backyard, nice, normal people, and it's not a problem. And see if you'd have people in Oviedo maybe willing to host a little sort of tour, whether that might help convince them that, you know, 5 pages of regulations for 4 birds is really a little unnecessary.
Yeah, and also talk to the city officials in that city and ask them about the problems, if there was any. I think, you know, if those city officials talk to the other city officials, that would eliminate, I would guess, the whole problem. I wouldn't see why it wouldn't.
Well, we have 7 city commissioners, commissioners that we have to deal with. Of
mm-hmm.
the 7, 2 are supportive of our action, but in order to pass the ordinance, we need a grand total of 4. So that leaves me 5 to, shall we say, convince. I have called and invited each and every one of them out to talk with me about the issue. And
uh-huh.
we do have another little town right next door to us called Osteen,
uh-huh.
where they have a little diner, Osteen Diner, where in their parking lot they have 2 beautiful, small backyard chicken coops like we were talking about using for our backyard chickens.
Right.
Out of the 5 commissioners, I was able to get 1 to agree to go out to the restaurant.
Wow.
And, right. Now, I have 3 people on our side.
Wow.
Because, like you said, show and tell works.
Yes. So all you need is one more.
Yeah. All I need is 1 more, but don't worry. November 7th is coming.
Uh-huh.
I'm losing my newest convert.
Right.
So
why don't you run for office?
Yeah, there you go, Jim.
Why don't you run to be in the commission?
God, yeah, that's a good idea.
Listen, time to get settled down. I just retired.
You have plenty of time on your hands.
One thing that, right, now, wait a minute. I haven't had time on my hands. I've been building a chicken coop all these months.
So, Jim, what's the deal? We're going back to the city. Is there another plan of action here or another meeting where you get to state your case again?
Yes, because every time we have gone to the city, they have, shall we say, done what was called tabling the motion. In other words,
right,
putting it aside to another date and hope they have it never come up again.
Right,
so
exactly.
So kind of sweep us off to the side. Unfortunately, our little group of cohorts have been growing every time they sweep us aside, and we just wait a couple of months and go back in with more information.
Mm-hmm.
And this time around, after learning that they keep thinking of us as many chicken farms in backyards, we're going in under the description of backyard chicken or backyard pet chickens. Because, I'm sorry, when you only have five, you end up naming them.
Right.
You have your kids and grandkids play with them. You know,
that's right.
They help make you breakfast, and then they come out and help you work in the garden. And
it's
you're going to react with them just like you do a cat or a dog. So these
that's
are
right.
now going to be classified as pet chickens to get away from the stigma of chicken farm and all the associated issues that sometimes go with large operations.
Well, we're out of time for this segment. Folks, we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm a great
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And we're talking about chickens for Deltona. Now, Renee, you had an interesting suggestion.
Yeah, I would think that in this economy and with people losing their jobs, I know for a fact this one little girl that was in our group, the only thing that she had to eat was the eggs from her chickens. And if it wasn't for that, her little 1-year-old baby wouldn't have had any food to eat. So, you know, these things provide nutrients that people need. I mean, an egg is a whole protein there, and
right.
it can sustain you. I mean, you can get yourself a little bit of rice and an egg, and you're set. A lot of people don't have the money to go out and buy steak and lobster. They're living off of these eggs.
That's true, especially here in Florida, right? Boy, that's
yeah.
really bad down here, the economy. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's an excellent point to bring up. And like you say, and calling them pets rather than farm animals, I think, helps also.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Jim, if you ever want to, if you ever want to point to my husband, and I have a website called petoftheday.com, and I can email you several chickens that have been pet of the day, and so they can read that these are family members. They're named, they're loved, and they're connected emotionally, and they're just another member of the family. They're not destructive, smelly, noisy beasts that live by the thousands in the backyard.
Right. That's true.
So I would have emails, as long as you don't mind if I forward them over to our commissioners so they can see how beautiful they've got.
Sorry, pet.
You should send him pictures of Tori Spelling. She takes her chicken, she takes her pet chicken on the red carpet with her.
That's right, I've seen that. She got a silky, right?
Yeah. Yep. He has a little white silky. And, he dresses it up in a little evening gown that matches hers.
And Martha Stewart has hers, and so does Paula Deen. You know, so celebrities have chickens, you know, and it's not like you said. But unfortunately, we're dealing with some very set mind or mindsets where they're saying, this is the way it is, no matter what you tell me, because we approached it from the party economy and the food offset. We also went from the nutritional factor where homegrown eggs
are
10
times
more nutritious.
Frank, the new trendy thing in food is being a localvore, and what could be more local than a chicken in your backyard?
Yeah,
people are wanting to get back to the earth and grow their own food and know what's in the product. You know, there's so many hormones and antibiotics in all our food. A lot of people are refusing to eat these store-bought chickens and store-bought eggs because of what goes into their food, and it's in, you know, by proxy, getting into us. So this is a more natural, holistic type thing.
It is. And you know, the other thing, I can't help but think they wouldn't try a trial basis like Orlando did. You know, if it works fine, and if it doesn't, well, let's hear why not. I just can't believe that we couldn't get that commission to do that, those commissioners to at least try it. Because you got, like you say, three of them now. There's got to be some fence riders in there somewhere, Jim. Somewhere you know, where you can
don't
just
worry,
pull
I'm
them
working
over.
On them, but like I said, November 7th is going to give me a whole brand new commissioner board to work with. And I have to start essentially the battle all over again because 50% of our board is being replaced with new commissioners. So
wow,
I'm going
so
in starting
in
all over again. But thankfully, past experience tells me when I'm supposed to bob and weave.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, maybe they're all chicken lovers.
Yeah, that's right. But that could go either way, Renee. You know, that might be really good or really bad.
Well, maybe he should get all the Deltona chicken people together to run for the county commission.
Yeah.
Might be.
Jim, do you have any idea who's going to be running? Do you have any idea who's going to be running for the new board? Or?
Yes. We have three seats that are becoming available. Of the three seats, two of them have candidates that will support us.
Wow.
Of course, they're not running unopposed, so that means that we got a 50-50 chance of those two candidates being elected. If they get elected, then I'm sitting with a 5-2 board in my favor.
Wow.
Yes.
You should tell anybody who's opposing chickens they are never allowed to eat chickens and eggs ever again.
Well, now's the time, though, because you have this opportunity with these new people who could get voted in to get out the vote, you know, to do the traditional American, go door to door and say, this might not affect you, but please vote for this person. Because, you know, most of the time people don't know or don't care who's on city council. They're going to vote for president or the big, you know, the big ticket, flashy political items. But if you should say, when you go in to vote, whoever you vote for president, be sure you vote for, you know, Jim and Renee and Bob for county commissioner while you're there.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Find out who's running.
And,
yeah, I know.
How many voting areas is there in Deltona?
There are five voting areas. We have a population of about 86,000 in Deltona.
Put some chicken people at each area and hand out like a little flyer that says, you know, this is the ordinance that we're trying to pass. We need these commissioners are favorable and say, you know, if you know, you don't mind if you haven't picked somebody, could you please, you know, consider that these people here are pro chicken.
We're going to be standing at
three corners.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah,
wow.
But,
hang up some flyers.
Or go approach the people that are going to be running. I think that'd be the thing to do. So you already done that? Gone talk to the people that are running for the city commission?
Yeah. We've been in contact with each one of the candidates. So we have six candidates running for three offices. We've talked with all six of them. And
I have to admit, once you get into the political arena, it is very interesting how some of their mindsets are.
Wow.
And I had one candidate come right out and tell me, oh, I don't want to be bothered by your chickens. It interferes with my agenda.
Oh, God.
I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I said,
well, just say thank you. I'll remember that when I go to vote.
I did.
Yeah. That's true.
That's
true.
The good thing about living in a country where we get to vote and we have a choice about who our county commissioners and who the politicians are that get elected. And in this season with so much political hype, people have to remember that just like you want your food to be local, all politics is indeed local. Mm. You know, get involved with the local issues that are going to affect you and your community far more than, sadly, what's happening out in Washington, D.C. No offense to any of the senators and congresspeople and presidential candidates, but local matters far more in your day-to-day life.
It does. It does. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think it's a great thing. You know, I was never, quote, politically active until I decided to get backyard chicken. And I've now got involved in not only my city, but the two neighboring cities as well with their efforts. And when we start finding out what especially entrenched politicians and what their attitudes are, and they don't think that you and I count what they want and what they want only.
Hey, Tim, did you get a chance to talk to Margaret? Because she just had the ordinances changed there in Brevard County.
I have been talking with Margaret. She is, again, with the Brevard County and the Abbott Homesteader, a website where they have been promoting not only backyard chickens, but gardening and self-sustainability through her website. And she's been a godsend with information.
Now, we're almost out of time for this segment. Jim, do you have a website where people can go to support your effort or to find out more information?
Well, the only thing we have up and running right now is a Facebook page, Chickens for Deltona, which they can always visit and join. And we can use input from anybody and everybody around the country to help us support us and also give us ideas and suggestions. Because sometimes we do everything we can think of and everything we can find out, and we still hit that proverbial brick wall. So new ideas are always appreciated.
We'll be keeping in touch with your efforts, Jim, and we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Our dogs are part of our family, an integral part of our lives, providing comfort, exercise, and companionship. All too often, however, this relationship is tested through dog naughtiness and general poor behavior. Our dog does not come when called, digs the garden, and many other issues that create frustration and a break in the relationship we seek. You love him, but you don't like him. Today's e-callers remote trainers have been developed to help you train your dog and overcome these issues that can result in separation from the family and worse. E-collar technology has been developed to help the everyday dog owner. Collars that set limit on the levels of stimulation and therefore limiting mistakes. If you seek a training aid that will assist you overcome the unwanted issues, e-collar technology products have developed dog training technology for the modern world that uses the lowest levels of distractive stimulus to improve behavior and reduce stress. www.ecollar.com. That's www.ecollar.com.
Attention all pet lovers! Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust, mites, and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's PAWSNSILK.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We're here, of course, with Chicken Joe, Joe Barber.
Hello. And
our next guest is Jeanette from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk, Jeanette.
Well, thank you for the invite. It's a pleasure to be here.
Boy, that's a mouthful saying all of that. Wow. And exactly, what is your job and what do you do? Give us a little bit on that.
Well, American Livestock Breeds Conservancy is an organization. We've been around for 35 years. We're a nonprofit, and our mission is basically the genetic conservation of traditional breeds of livestock and poultry. What that means is if the breeds we work with, if any of those were to disappear, there is no foundation left to be able to recreate those animals. So once they're gone, that's it. And that can mean a number of things. In some instances, it could mean, you know, thousands of years of history of this animal is gone in one fell swoop, or that, you know, there are characteristics or certain aspects of these animals that could be really important in the future, and by losing them, we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater. So we work really hard to try and refine the breeds that we're working with, you know, so we target animals that are genetically unique and have history in the United States, and that their populations are such that they're under threat for whatever reason. Maybe there's not a lot of people breeding them. Maybe, you know, the census numbers are very low. For whatever reason, they get on what we call our conservation priority list, and that's the list of breeds that we work with. And it's with that list that we kind of formulate what we're going to do each year. And my primary job is I'm the main field person, and I'll go out and investigate populations that are under threat or could be of interest to us. I do a lot of one-on-one with farmers. A lot of folks are wanting to get into heritage breeds these days, but they don't know how to breed them properly. You know, we've all gotten so used to just ordering chicks from the hatchery and getting new ones in the spring. And a lot of folks have forgotten the methods that are used to breed good animals. So we help people become better breeders. A lot of times we help people connect with the breeds that are most appropriate for their farm projects. You know, like if somebody calls and says, hey, I want to get a breed of cow on the farm, and I'll say, well, do you want meat cow, do you want a milk cow, and do you have any experience, and what kind of infrastructure you have? And, you know, you walk them through the process of thinking this all out, and the beauty of it, of the process, is that you can refine which breeds and which species are going to work for you pretty easily by just asking the right questions. So that's kind of a rough idea of what we do. You know, we're working on a big annual census right now of livestock breeds. We haven't done a census in a while, so this is going to be really critical as we come up on the end of that census and have been getting some really cool data coming in.
I was just reading a little bit about that a couple of weeks ago, where they were saying we're losing on the average of two domestic animals breeds each week.
Yeah, you know, it depends on who you talk to. Like with the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, yeah, they're estimating that we're losing them at a pretty dramatic rate. And but that's globally. Like here in the United States, I like to think at least we've got a pretty good handle on it, although there's certainly populations out there that we don't even know about yet that could be in danger, because as a lot of the old timers pass on, a lot of times their families don't want to stay in farming or just aren't into the animals, and so off to the stockyards they go, and that's all she wrote. So those are the kind of things that we really keep our eyes and ears open for, and also utilize our members if they see something of interest to us that it could be in danger. They're a really good resource for us to help identify animals that might need our help.
And I understand, I don't know if this is right, this is the right number, but they're estimating 6,000 livestock breeds are in intimate danger of extinction?
That's probably about right. Again, you're talking about globally.
Right.
But,
mm-hmm.
In developing countries, there are a lot of populations that are restricted to very small regions. And when you take a look at it in the big picture, that's a lot of animals.
It is. They're never coming back once they're gone.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's what's scary is they're not coming back.
Yeah,
wow. And I didn't realize it was that big of a thing, but I remember.
Oh, sure. And again, we don't know what we're losing. I mean, some of those animals could have a particular resistance to disease, or in this time of global warming, it's these animals that most likely can withstand weather extremes or, challenging environments, because that's where they were developed. And that's where these animals are really coming into their own as the sustainable agriculture movement comes to the forefront, in the past few years. It's these heritage breeds that people are looking to have a more sustainable system of agriculture. And it's not to say they're going to take over the world and replace commercial production, but for people that want an alternative, these are great, if you get the right breed for the right purpose, Mother Nature won't work against you. If you got her working for you, she comes cheap, And so, these animals are great multitaskers. These are animals that historically were used not just for one thing, but also for services around the farm. And so, like, for instance, I breed marsh tacky horses. They're woods horses. I use them to clean my woods. In addition, I struggle with my husband to try and justify that they do have purpose and they're not useless. We have excellent garden fertility with the horses, and our woods are kept clean and open, and we use them for what they were created for, and it's been a boon to our farm.
Yeah, and I know that most people don't realize how many animals are going extinct or are on the edge of going extinct. It's amazing. I didn't realize until I was reading about it.
There are probably more giant pandas on Earth than there are most of the breeds that are on our list.
Yeah.
Now, how few, like in chickens, how many chickens count as, if they're under how many, are they regarded as threatened?
Well, we have a number of categories within our conservation priority list. So in the case of chickens, if you looked at the most, the category needing the most help, that would be critical. And so for order for them to be on critical, you say there are fewer than 500 breeding birds in the United States, and five or fewer primary breeding flocks, and that would be 50 birds or more, and an estimated global population of less than 1,000. And we have a fairly sizable number of breeds of chicken on our list. The next category would be threatened, where you have fewer than 1,000 breeding birds. And then it goes up from there to watch, which is fewer than 5,000. And then we have a recovering category where their numbers are doing okay, but we've got them in recovery because you never know if that breed is going to go out of vogue and, backslide. So we put them there. And then there's a study category for the breeds that we're still taking a hard look at and trying to decide, are they genetically distinct and are they irreplaceable and do we need to do something about it?
I was just looking at 13 different breeds of chickens are practically extinct right now. Is that a true number?
Yeah, about that. Our critical list, it's about 12, 13 there, and about the same in threatened, and there are a larger number in watched, and we've got a few in recovering that are doing quite well, and
well, we're
study.
We're just about out of time for this segment. Jeanette, will you stick with us and come back?
Sure.
We'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We are talking with Jeanette about breeds of chickens that are threatened or in danger of going extinct.
Or practically extinct, Karen. Yeah, some of them are almost extinct. That's what amazes me, is I didn't realize all of this until the last year or so.
And, yeah, well, we've had some really good successes in trying to turn that around for some breeds. Recently, we had a project to recover the Buckeye chicken, which was in the critical category up until last year when we were able to move them up to threatened. And as I was mentioning earlier, we work with farmers to try and teach them how to be better breeders. And with the case of the Buckeye, they had been showbirds for so long that the qualities that made them great meat birds had diminished. And so what we did was concentrate our efforts into getting, you know, as many Buckeyes on the ground and into hands of a new generation of breeders that we could then teach to select their breeders with good reasons. You know, we want them to be a little bit faster growing so that, you know, by maybe 14 to 16 weeks you can have a good table bird, a roaster, and then also work on egg-laying qualities. And, you know, all of these techniques, it's not rocket science, and it's tried and true from the masters, you know, that were doing this back in the day. And it's been really amazing to see the turnaround with that breed. And you've got some dynamite Buckeyes out there now. You know, the project started about 5 years ago. And, you know, I was at the APA National Meet the other week and got my hands on a Buckeye at the meet. And, you know, that's a bird I wouldn't turn out of my flock. It was pretty darn nice. Uh-huh. And sure enough, some of the bloodlines that were in that bird were part of our recovery project. And so the Buckeye has been a real great success story. Right now we're working on recovering the Java, which has a ways to go, but we're in coming into year two on that project.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the rarest chicken? Somebody told me it was a Burmese Bantam. There's less than 50 of them, I guess. Is that true?
Well, I don't know. It's not a breed we work with. And, you know, we haven't done a recent census, so I can't tell you numbers. Animals I could say that we're fairly concerned about these days would be like Holland chickens. There aren't a lot of them out there. There are a few people working with them, but not a lot. Some of the game chickens, actually, there are fewer and fewer people working with them, and they're a bit of a challenge because it's not like you can manage a massive flock and everybody's going to get along okay because they're game
that's
chickens.
And
Dorkings, it's really hard to find good Dorkings. Even though they're in our threatened category, we suspect that they may change because there just aren't a lot of Dorkings out there. And you know, there's red caps. You don't see a lot of them either.
I tried to get some of those red caps, and I'm still on a list with one of the
hatcheries. Yeah, yeah. I've seen one in an APA show last year, but
those
I haven't
critical,
seen
aren't
any
they?
Others. Excuse me?
Those are in the critical list, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
Yeah, because I wanted to get some, and I've been on a list. I know I've been on close to a year. And every time I call up to order other chickens, I ask about the red caps, and they say, nope, nothing. So
yeah,
I'm thinking, those are really
getting
hard.
Yeah, they're hard to come by. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And,
now, I just got some golden campines. Those are my favorites
Good. I've seen some good ones. There was some outstanding campines at the APA show in Indianapolis last year, and I was fortunate enough to be able to photograph them. They were superb, and there were some campines at this year's show, too, that were pretty decent. But
was there
one
silvers?
Of my little...
I haven't been able to see any silvers. I've never seen a real silver one, just the golden ones.
Yeah, I thought I saw silver in Ohio this year, but I can't be sure. Part of one of the projects I'm working on is photo documenting the breeds and the different color varieties, so each year I try to photograph as many birds as I can at the shows, but the challenge, because you don't want to photograph just any bird, you want to photograph a good representative of that breed. And so half my time is evaluating the birds, and then my other half is photographing. but it's been a fun project.
The campines, I guess, are supposed to be really, really critical. I guess on the list, I heard that they're like the second or third rarest chicken on Earth.
I don't know about that because their European numbers might be a little bit better, but there's certainly not many around. But, you know, if you're looking at what's showing up at the shows, there are more campines showing up than, say, red cap. You know, the red caps, I've just seen one pullet in the years that I've been going to chicken shows. So they're pretty darn rare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, and I get those black Spanish. You know, they have the white face. Now, I heard I got seven of those.
Yeah, those are particularly rare too. There aren't a lot of folks raising them in numbers. You know, that's the thing is you've got a few here, a few there, but as far as primary flocks, there are maybe two or three people in the country that have sizable flocks, and that's it.
Yep.
So it's scary. And
yeah,
that's an old breed. I mean, that's an ancient breed, and it would be a sin to lose them.
Yeah, that's an old Mediterranean breed. That's why they fascinated me, and I got on the list. And again, I waited almost a year before I could get those. And, and so now I have seven of those, and of course they're young, but I can't wait till they start laying eggs. And my friend Renee down the road with her commercial incubator can't wait either. so we're trying to bring those back. I'm going to try to do that, and I wanted to add on some more of these rare chickens and where to get them, and that's why I joined Dr. Everett's Rare Chicken Club, and I just found him, so I just joined that, and I'm sure you're familiar with him, I guess.
Oh yeah, with the SPPA.
Yeah.
And the other place you can look, ALBC has an online breeders directory and online classifieds. Mm-hmm. And you can locate chickens through our online listing. It's for free. Anybody can search it. And in order to post, you have to be a member. But that would be another resource where you could locate rare breeds, you know, poultry and livestock on our website.
Uh-huh. And your website is albc-usa.org?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about spelling out American Livestock Breed Conservancy.
You know? Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, so I was just amazed. You know, I was reading a little bit about that, and I just was amazed at the amount of animals, like I said, not just chickens, that are really, really going extinct in the world, not just in the U.S.
Yeah, well, just with the American breeds, we've got our eye on almost 200 breeds, and it's a tough list to manage, you know, because each one has their own problems, and you know, you can't put your entire effort into just one, and so it's very challenging to balance what you can do for each breed. And some breeds have strong breed associations, and they do incredible work to keep them going. And then there are others that, you know, completely need our help to do the littlest thing, because there aren't breed associations, and we're the only way the breeders can connect and be able to work together to recover these breeds and keep them from disappearing.
And the other thing that really amazed me is these rare chickens aren't really expensive. When I first heard about rare chickens, I thought, oh boy, we're going to be paying all kinds of money for rare chickens, but that's not true. I don't know about the animal part of it, but the chicken parts, that's not the truth, you know?
And rabbits can be fairly, you know, inexpensive compared to, say, a goat or a horse. But
right.
Some of the chickens, though, you know, if you're getting them from a bloodline that is particularly good or top-quality showbirds, you know, and you've got some guarantees that these animals meet breed standards, then, you know, for a dozen eggs, you might pay $50, you know, for hatching eggs.
Which is less than you're going to pay for lots of things. That's a week worth of lattes for some people.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
We're out of time for this segment. Jeanette, will you stick with us and come right back?
Sure.
We'll be back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Dog a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Now through Labor Day, save 20% on Super Gravy and all Clear Conscience Pet treats at Pet Food Warehouse in South Burlington and Shelburne.
I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And before I forget today, I want to mention anybody who wants to find out more about the radio show or about our host, see Joe's picture with his little dog, you can go to allpawspettalk.com. And if you want to listen to the radio show, it's streaming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on WPETTalkRadio.com. Now, Joe and Jeanette, we were talking about rare breeds and how they aren't that expensive when it comes to chickens.
No, I don't think so. Not really. Yeah.
Not really. But, you know, I always tell people, buyer beware. That, if you are going to spend money on these animals and want the real deal, make sure you ask key questions like, does your breeding stock meet APA standard for the breed? They either do or they don't. that's a real key question, because there are a lot of folks out there that they're cashing in on the heritage chicken craze right now. It's like, hen fever of the 21st century. And so, you know, ask that question. Ask, are you selecting for personality? Are you selecting for meat qualities? Are you selecting for egg laying? You know, what do you expect your birds to produce, you know, after you get them? It might annoy some people if they're being questioned, but if you're spending good money on birds, you need to know these things. And, you know, if they can't answer those questions. Oh, and one other important point, are they NPIP inspected? You know, there are a lot of folks shipping birds that, you know, aren't NPIP certified. And in order to, for people listening that don't know what that is, that's the National Poultry.
I was just going to ask.
Yeah, me too.
National Poultry Improvement Program, which is a program to help fight off disease in chickens. It was actually started by the American Poultry Association back in the early 1900s, and then USDA slowly took it over. And all it is, you know, you have your inspectors come to your farm. They do a really simple, you know, prick underneath the chicken's wing and get a couple drops of blood, and they test for salmonella-related diseases, and they also test for avian influenza. And typically, like, I have a flock of about 50 birds, and it costs me all of $5 to have it done. And you get a certificate that shows that your birds are free of those diseases. And if you have any interest in showing your birds, you have to have a certificate in order to bring them to show. But for hatcheries, you know, the bare minimum, their birds should be NPIP certified, because if they're not, you don't know what you're bringing into your own flock, you know.
Right.
So,
now, most of the major hatcheries are, aren't they? I would assume the big hatcheries.
Not all of them. Not all of them. No? You know, there's so many hatcheries cropping up here and there that, you know, it's something you need to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I've never asked about the one that I order from all the time. I just assumed they were, but boy, that's
yeah,
wrong.
Well, that's what most folks do, and they also assume that the birds are going to meet breed standard, and most of the large commercial hatcheries will not guarantee that they'll meet breed standard. It's not to say they don't have good birds. It's just, you know, a lot of them, you know, might be have a little bit of Leghorn in them to up egg production, or, you know, hatchery birds, you kind of run the gambit. Some of the hatcheries can be really great and have outstanding birds, and then there are others that, you know, we get calls all the time, like people getting Rhode Island Reds, and they want to know, well, how come these birds aren't broody? Why aren't they sitting? And, you know, ultimately, it's always a matter of them getting them from a commercial hatchery, and they're commercial Rhode Island Reds, and they were bred to not be broody, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, so people looking for these breeds, ask those questions, and you'll get a lot further with getting quality birds.
I was just looking at the hatchery that I order from, and they do. They're in USDA and the National Poultry Improved Plan, and
yeah,
they're certified with NPIP. So
yep.
I guess I'm all set.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's particularly good if people are trying to be getting chickens and want to consider the rare breeds. That if you're dealing with any hatchery, you should make sure that the birds you're going to be getting are going to be healthy and they have those certifications. Just seems like a no-brainer of something that you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
You would, but it's again, it's not always the case. And then on top of that, whenever you're bringing new birds into your farm, you need to quarantine them at least 30 days just to be sure, because the stress of shipping, it could bring out something that's underlying, and it's always good practice to just keep them separate, you know, feed and clean them last every day, and, you know, just try not to cross-contaminate for a minimum 30 days. And, you know, that way you can be sure that the birds are, you know, free of problems, and then you can slowly introduce them to your other birds. But quarantine's very important.
That's exactly what I do. I have a brooder house when I buy my day olds. That's exactly on the opposite end of my farm, and they stay over there for well over a month.
And oh, yeah, yeah. It's just good practice. And
it is.
Even if, you know, it can be a pain in the butt, but you know, what harm is it to just do that and get it over with? And also when you have, the folks from USDA coming to, do NPIP, you can say, hey, this is my, biosecurity plan. I quarantine everything. I get NPIP every year, and I'm a responsible owner,
Boy, that's good, but boy, like you say, the red caps, those are my next ones. I've been trying to get those and and I guess I'm going to have to go searching here to see if I can get any somewhere else because the major breeders just don't have them.
Yeah, well, with your membership to SPPA, they put out a breeders directory every year, and as I said, we've got a online breeders directory you can access, and between the two, hopefully you'll be able to track some down.
Yeah, boy, those are beautiful chickens. I've been looking at a picture of them right now. Boy,
yeah, they're pretty neat. I'm just looking at our directory now, and we've got four people breeding red caps in the U.S. So jump online. You can hook up with them.
Well, I'm going to. I've already written that down the first time you said it. I said, boy.
Is there some sort of guideline on your website of, you mentioned certain breeds being good in certain areas?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that some breeds are very popular everywhere, but are there breeds that, like, if Joe is in Florida, should he be concentrating on different breeds than I would up here in Boston, Massachusetts area?
Oh, certainly. Like, in Florida, you can basically get just about anything you want, with the exception I wouldn't necessarily get, like, a big-bodied bird like a Brahma or a Cochin, and I wouldn't get a cold-adapted breed like a Chanticleer. But what would be really useful is working with breeds that, have the big combs and that the people up north can't really keep without a heated barn. So definitely Spanish would have been one of them I would have recommended, and red caps, and you've got some Andalusians. There are very few people working with Andalusians these days, and and Menorcas too, although there were some incredible Menorcas in Ohio the other week. But those big single comb birds that really are risky with frostbite, I would go something like that in Florida. I'd stay away from birds with, feathered feet because it is wet and humid down there. And
God, I just got white sultans. Now you tell me that.
Well, just make sure they can get dry. That's going to be the big thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, as I said earlier, you just ask the right questions, and slowly you can whittle down the list of what breeds is going to work for you. And, that way your chances of successes are going to be great. So, I'd stay away from big-bodied birds, and I'd stay away from cold-adapted birds. But up in New England, look for breeds that are going to have the smaller combs and wattles and can handle the cold without having to spend a fortune on keeping a barn warm. And
that's right. Jeanette, I want to thank you for being with us today. We are out of time for this week.
Okay. All right.
Already. I had
folks,
thousand
we'll
more
be
questions.
Back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio next time.